Innovation Minds presents At the Edge, a podcast about using innovation to empower and drive engagement. The nature of work has changed. Companies around the world are struggling to find the right balance in the new work-from-home hybrid paradigm. As much of the workforce begins to go back to the office after more than a year working remotely, how can leaders keep their employees engaged and collaborating successfully? In this podcast, we interview thought leaders from business and hear their stories and viewpoints on how to use innovation to engage the workforce, as well as how to innovate engagement.
There are three questions you need to have with your team or your entire organization. You know, the first is, why are people so threatened by change? Typically, it's fear of the unknown. It's a fear of failure. The number one way to get past that is to create a climate where it's okay to ask why. The second question is, how do you get past the but that's the way we've always done it syndrome? And then the third one is, what motivates people to move outside of their comfort zone?
Today, we're here with Jeff Tobe. Jeff is a multidisciplinary expert across many fields. He was chosen by Readers of Conventions and Meetings magazine as one of the top 15 speakers in all of North America. And that list includes people like Anderson Cooper, Condoleezza Rice, and Daniel Pink. Jeff is the best-selling author of several books, including most notably Coloring Outside the Line. And he travels the world teaching organizations how to increase their bottom line and retain great talent. So Jeff, welcome to Innovation at the Edge, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Michael.
How do you get a topic like employee experience and innovation to be that desirable among people who are looking for speakers?
You know, it's funny. I kind of fell into it. Originally, Coloring Outside the Lines is not only the name of my book, it's the name of my company, it's my brand. And I originally talked about being more creative in business, period. I kind of fell into the speaking business, believe it or not, 29 years ago. And then I realized that it wasn't applicable. I didn't know, you know, I wasn't telling people how to use it. I was just telling them how to be more creative and innovative. So I went back to school, got my master's degree, and really focused on what I call the customer experience. So that's really the umbrella. So I talk about creative thinking as it applies to the customer experience by getting your people more engaged in what they do every day. So when I'm keynoting, I touch on all three. You know, it's fairly shallow, I guess, in an hour. But I also do training, and then I do long-term consulting as well. And it's all based around customer experience, of which employee engagement is a huge part of it.
And why is engagement such an important topic? Why do people care so much about it?
Oh, my gosh. It's kind of the buzzword, at least it is here in the States. And I shouldn't say that. It's everywhere I travel in the world. Why? Because I think that people are finally waking up to the idea that it's not good enough just to have a satisfied employee. Gallup organization does a poll every year worldwide on employee engagement. In the U.S. last year, they said that 33% of Americans are engaged in what they do every day. 33% is pathetic. It's one of the lowest in the world. And so I say, don't confuse employee satisfaction with employee engagement. Employee satisfaction simply means that, you know, 67% of employees are going to work to get their check, right, to get their paycheck. And so they're happy to get their paycheck. They'll even tell you, I love working here. They're just not engaged. And what we've proven, especially in my last book, which is called Anticipate, Knowing What Customers Need Before They Do, we proved without a shadow of a doubt that the more engaged people are internally, the better the experience externally. And so by doing that research, I finally got an aha. You know, what if the companies and organizations I'm working with focused internally instead of just focusing on the customer experience externally? Worldwide, there's a movement to get employees more engaged.
How do you do it? What are some of the techniques that people should use to get employees more engaged?
Fear. No, I'm kidding. Just kidding. That's all. We can talk about motivation, but the bottom line is, if you don't mind, I'll actually give your listeners and viewers an exercise that they can do very quickly to get their people engaged. See, Michael, I believe that engagement starts at the bottom and works its way up. It doesn't start with management and come down. And that's the biggest mistake that I see organizations of any kind and any size making. So what can we do to get people more engaged at a grassroots level? very simply, the first thing is I talk about touch points. And a touch point is any opportunity we have to influence the customer experience. So what it means is taking an easel with paper and some markers and saying to your people, what are our touch points in any given day? If it's just your team, what are our team's touch points? If it's the entire organization, what's the organization's touch points? And at first, it's like pulling teeth. You're going to hear things about marketing. Our website is a touch point. Our business card that we hand somebody is a touch point. But you need it to go further. I give an example. I'll say, well, if somebody pulls up outside your office and can't find a parking spot, that's a touch point. I come in to use the men's room and it's dirty. That's a touch point. And once they get that, you'll end up with about writing them down. You're going to end up with about 20 to 30 touch points. Then take a break. Say to your team, all right, you're on the honor system. Come up and put a check mark beside the top 5 priority touch points in the organization. And then bite your tongue as a manager, as a leader. And it's amazing what will happen. They'll start to, they'll pick the top 5. Then find out who owns each of those top 5 touch points. So the men's room, it's dirty. Who owns the touch point, the men's room? And maybe your maintenance staff, owns it. Then say, okay, how do we improve or how do we tweak or make better this one little touch point, called maintenance? And get their ideas. Now they've got accountability, they've got ownership. And by tweaking those 5, and 5 is not a magic number. I use 5, but it could be 7, it could be 10. But by tweaking those little touch points, it will completely change the external customer experience.
You have something you call the 4 pillars of engagement. Do you want to talk about?
It's 4 pillars of engagement. The first is commitment. And what do I mean is committed to the customer experience. I like to say that there's a big difference between customer service and customer experience. And people have to understand that. Most organizations with whom I've worked, and I've worked, in 47 countries with over 100,000 people. And I have to tell you that the customer service is kind of ingrained in their mentality. I do a lot of work in healthcare and patient experience. It comes from the heart. Customer service is from the heart. What can I do for you? How can I help you? But it's no longer a differentiating factor in the marketplace. Anybody's competitors will tell me they're great at customer service. When you make the leap to customer experience, it means you're stepping back and asking yourself, what's my customer's experience from the minute they make contact with me till the minute they're done? The end-to-end customer experience. And that involves so many more people than just, one person. How can I help you? And the other added benefit back to our original, what we're talking about in the umbrella of engagement, it gets people more engaged. You've got somebody in IT who's sitting at a computer all day, Michael, and they're going, rah, rah, customer service. I never even talk to the customer. Or that's somebody else's job, customer service. But now you say to that person, you are an integral part of the end-to-end customer experience. People become a little more engaged because they understand their role in that end-to-end experience. The second pillar is accountability. One of the things, and this is universal, I used to think it was just North American, but I find that accountability at work is a huge topic and we could talk about it all day. But, if we can at least get our people to be more accountable for their actions, for what they say and do, we'll find that they'll be more engaged at what they do. The third pillar is what I call curiosity. And when I work with an organization one-on-one, the first thing I tell them is one of my goals is to make your organization more curious. They look at me like I'm out of my mind. And what I'm talking about is exactly what you do and what I do, and that is be more creative, more innovative. But I use curiosity because I put it at a very basic level. If I could get everybody in the organization out looking for examples of how other organizations are engaging their employees, how other organizations are being creative, and bring it back to our organization, massage it a little bit, then that's what I call being curious. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. And most people, like, as when they hear innovation, when they hear creativity, they're thinking, pie in the sky creativity. And it's not. It's I call research and development, but it's really just stealing other ideas as well. So, I had a great experience at a restaurant I went to last night. What was it about that experience that made it great? Let's bring those things back into the organization. And the fourth pillar is communication. it's probably the biggest. When I do a survey, pre-consultation survey with my clients, communication, I'm making this up, but probably comes up 90% of the time that it's one of the biggest challenges they have. And then when I ask an organization about it, they go, they can't tell me. And so, well, there's an oxymoron there because it's about communication. So it really is about engaging your employees at a point where there's more communication at every level of the organization. It's almost a flat organization, not a silo or top to bottom.
When we look at these four pillars, they seem pretty straightforward.
Exactly.
They seem like things that any organization sensibly would want to practice.
Well, doesn't it go back to their culture? I mean, that's the bottom line. I say culture and I still get the hair on the back of my neck kind of stands up because I go in to an organization. I say, I don't want to change your culture. You know, how old is your organization? Well, it's 75 years old. Why would I change your culture? You know, even though that we blame culture for employees not being engaged. But I think culture is the past. That's why we have a rear view mirror. You know, it's important. We can still look at it. But the windshield is climate. And just like outside anywhere in the world, the climate's always changing. Well, the climate in an organization is always changing. And so if we just look at how do we make, small changes to the client, the climate, the current climate right now, then that's where the changes happen. And yes, they are they're very basic, but you'd be surprised when I use them that a lot of organizations are still going, really? Accountability? Wow, they hadn't really focused on that before. It's a syndrome that I find quite often. It's called the TTWWADI syndrome. That's the way we've always done it syndrome, right? But that's the way we've always done it. And so the first step in looking at the customer experience and engagement differently is to get past the, but that's the way we've always done it syndrome. There are three questions you need to have with your team or your entire organization. You know, the first is, why are people so threatened by change? And typically it's fear of the unknown. It's a fear of failure. I once heard a sales trainer, we're not here for sales training, but I once heard a sales trainer say, fear is just an acronym for false evidence appearing real. I like that only because, you know what, it may not be real to you, but it's very real to the people experiencing it. So that's the first thing. The second question is, how do you get past the but that's the way we've always done it syndrome? Probably the number one way to get past that is to create a climate where it's okay to ask why. Why do we do it that way? Why has it always been done that way? And maybe why not? Why not try this? But I don't know if you have kids, Michael, do you? Okay. Do you remember the 2-3-year-olds when why was like, why daddy, why daddy, why daddy? So there is I like to say there's a warning that comes with coloring outside the lines. It's okay to color outside the lines as long as you don't fall off the page, right? So you got to know your team well enough to give them, to empower them to ask why. And then the third one is, what motivates people to move outside of their comfort zone? These are the three questions. And again, you're going to hear things like pressure. Personally, if I don't move outside my comfort zone, I may not be here a year from now. And then professionally, if we as an organization or a team don't move outside of our comfort zone, we may not be here a year from now.
In this sort of acceleration into the future where creativity and innovation is so important, you know, what's the secret sauce that an organization can sort of focus on to get themselves up to speed, to get themselves into an engagement with their employees and their customers in a way that's going to actually get them going?
I think the first thing, and I hope you'll agree, is that it's never done. I have organizations who, when I'm done with my contract or I walk away or whatever it is, or I start with them and they say, oh yeah, look, we used to have meetings in person and now look how we've changed. You know, we've got these meetings, virtual meetings, and we accepted change. Well, it's not done. And so I think it's a mentality of it's a journey. It's not, you know, it's not a task. And, you know, I think the second thing is something that I espouse, and that is that there's always more than one right answer. And as simple as that seems, Michael, it seems to be a mindset that when an organization gets it, they really get it. In other words, they're constantly challenging themselves. Even when they find themselves saying, oh, I've seen this 1,000 times before, I know exactly what to do. They say to themselves, oh, wait a second, Jeff said there's always more than one right answer. So let's challenge ourselves before we leave this meeting. to look for that second right answer. I call it giving yourself an ask, an alternative solution kick, right? So I think it's incredibly important. And the other part is to understand perspective. You know, I like to say, see the world through your customer's eyes and you'll see the way your customer buys. And let me just explain, I use customer because it might be client, it might be patient, it might be member. That's what we think when we think of our customer. But you know what? I think everyone who's listening will agree we have internal customers and external customers. So when it comes to engagement, it's about our internal customer. We still have to see the world through their eyes and see how they buy into change, how they buy into new concepts, how they buy into whatever this new normal is going to look like.
What do you see as the connection between innovation and engagement?
To remain, you know, successful organizations, I have to tell you, I've seen just go to great lengths to nurture innovation, you know, as I'm sure you see as well. And they're not always doing it right, but from internal startups to C-suite, you know, we know the opportunity to be innovative drives employee engagement. There are stats out there. There are studies that have been done. You know, our own data that we did for Anticipate, the book, indicates that engagement is highly correlated with innovation behaviors of all types of organization. It just encompasses, I guess, having a culture that encourages its employees to innovate, even though success, as you know, isn't guaranteed, right? And I think that's a big stumbling block. So many organizations say, well, what if we fail? Okay, what if we fail? Let's debrief it. As long as it doesn't bankrupt us, it's not illegal or immoral, we might fail.
So the question is, does innovation lead to innovation, or does innovation lead to innovative ideas?
I like to say, in fact, it's both. If you foster innovation in your organization, you'll probably find that your engagement levels benefit too.
Right. I suppose the part of the benefit of that is that whereas a lot of people might find it difficult to accept an innovation that doesn't work out, if there's other benefits to the innovation process besides just the final product, such as a more engaged, happier, more educated workforce, then you get that benefit no matter what happens with the, you know, actual.
It has worked out, right? Exactly. I think that you'll agree part of innovation is that flexibility for how we measure success. And that's sometimes hard to share with a client because, you know, you have this goal in mind. That may not be where we go, but we'll find out along the way, you know, what's different milestones, I guess I would call them. If you think about creativity as two words, there's create. As human beings, we create all the time. But then there's the ivity. That's the hard part. And I also say, well, you don't walk around talking about a company or an organization saying, wow, are they ever creative? Like you don't say, look at Microsoft. Are they ever creative? We say, are they ever innovative? Why? Because they took action. But I definitely think we're becoming more engaged. I think that organizations are realizing that engagement, you know, is a matter of survival in business today. And they're seeing so many examples of engaged employees, you know, ultimately creating the ideal or the wow experience, as I like to say. And so they're so closely knit that I think what organizations, and I know I've said this in the podcast, but what organizations are realizing is that I can work internally and still, you know, create a better experience, and it ultimately leads to a better margin, a better bottom line. So if I can make money by getting my people more engaged, it just makes sense. So I'm optimistic, that overly optimistic, that we're becoming more engaged.
One of the guests on our earlier podcasts mentioned the high cost of replacing a single employee.
I think it's about seven times whatever it costs you to retain an employee. So that's huge. Exactly. That's a hard cost. You know, you can't ignore the figures.
The other statistic I heard, which I think is shocking, relates to your 33% Gallup statistic, mm-hmm. is that they've said that 20% of American workers are actively disengaged, which they defined as essentially sabotaging the workplace.
The bottom line is I saw somebody take it a step further and look at that 20% disengaged and look at it compared to generations. It's very interesting, right? Because now you're saying, all right, of that 20%, how does the generational breakdown happen? And what was surprising to me is that many of those disengaged are older, what I would call veteran workers. In other words, they've been there for quite a while. It's, you know, we blame, unfortunately, you know, we blame Gen Y and hopefully not the new generation that's coming behind them for being lazy, for, you know, not being engaged at work. It's not true. They're just engaged in a different way. And so I, again, maybe overly optimistic, Michael, but I think that those, you know, we're working our way out of that, because I think those older veteran workers are soon to retire, to leave the workplace. And I think this new generation that's coming in and Gen Y are fantastic. They just get engaged differently than what we've, you know, done before. One of the things I say is, you know, if you understand your people better than anybody else and work with them in a way in which they need to be worked with, not a way in which you've been used to working with them. And that's a whole mind shift right there for organizations and for leaders. But we have to work with them. And then I have to tell you, a lot of senior leaders roll their eyes and go, that seems like a lot of work. Well, guess what? Yes, it is.
And the benefits will come from that.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if you had to give one piece of advice or piece of information to people listening to this podcast and you wanted them to remember you for it, what would you say?
I think it would be to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. You know, let me give in the same vein a challenge to your listeners. And I know that we can't see them, but I'm going to give them a challenge. And it's simply this. Next time you get into your car to drive somewhere, I want you to drive there only looking in your rearview mirror. Wait, don't do it. I'm only kidding. But the point is this. I find so many organizations, so many people who get into the proverbial car every single day, their cubicle, their office, right now, maybe their bedroom, if that's where they're working out of, right? And we approach what we're doing only looking in our rearview mirrors to see how things have been done in the past. My advice is keep thinking about the windshield and figure out what's coming down the road ahead of you in your profession, in your business, in employee engagement, and focus on that.
Anything else you'd like to share with us?
I'd love to make an offer to your listeners if I can.
Sure.
And that's this. If you send me an email, my email address is Jeff, J-E-F-F, at jefftobe.com, J-E-F-F-T-O-B-E.com. And you just put in the subject line, free book. I will be happy to send you a free copy of Coloring Outside the Lines. It's just a PDF. It's not the Kindle version or anything else, but I'd be happy to send you. And make sure in the text, you tell me that you heard me on Michael's podcast. I'll be glad to send you a copy of the free book of Coloring Outside the Lines. And can I brag about it? It's the only business book in the world illustrated by my then 12-year-old daughter. So I'm very proud of that.
And that's probably a record that's never going to be broken.
Hey, that's exactly right. I was sitting at dinner one night and I was complaining that the illustrators were going to take 6 weeks. And my daughter said, Dad, I can do it by tomorrow. I said, go for it. It's Coloring Outside the Lines. So, yeah.
And I've actually read it. It's wow. Definitely a book worth having a look at. And I did not know that the drawings were done by your own child. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
It's a fun book. It's an hour to an hour and a half read. That's about it. And it's just business lessons that I've learned. So,
and clearly you've learned many because you've been doing this for a long time and you're one of the best.
Well, thank you. Thanks for saying that.
Thank you for being here with us. We really, really appreciate you sharing your thoughts. And we hope to see you again here sometime soon.
Thank you. To everybody, keep coloring outside the lines.
This has been At the Edge, a podcast from Innovation Minds. We look forward to hosting you on our next episode, which you can find through the same channel you got here with today. Please join our LinkedIn group where you can discuss every episode. You can find the link in the show notes. We're really glad you were here, and thank you very much from Innovation Minds.